Hey, this is actress Carissa Lee Staples, and you're listening to the O Brother Podcast.
Welcome to the O Brother Podcast with hosts Dan and Mike Smith, brothers from the same mother with different opinions on movies, TV, video games, and more, plus celebrity interviews. Get ready, get set, it's time for the O Brother Podcast. Welcome to the O Brother Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Smith. Alongside me, as always, my brother from the same mother, Mike Smith.
It's like Halloween Fest. We're coming down the road. I'm 10 days out from seeing you in person, God forbid.
As of this recording, yeah.
Yeah, as of this recording.
Okay, what's the deal here? You got the proper attire in the laundry or what?
I'm glad you asked that.
That shirt was never a good shirt. But
no,
it's horrible. That's a piece. It's like, it looks like a scratch and sniff shirt.
Yeah. It's our old low. And I think I got credit for these. I don't think they charged me because it was
I like
so
the
horrible.
Logo. I liked it, but that just, the shirt looks horrible.
And I've got a little throwback here in the mug. If you notice.
Interesting. Oh, that's right.
Can you read it?
It's a Halloween edition.
It wasn't even mug. Halloween Fest yet.
Right.
This is the Halloween edition.
Well, this is the one you should be sporting, which is, of course, is the official Halloween Fest O Brother mug.
Kind of like this one here.
And Halloween Fest rolls on. So, you know, we're going to continue not only the tradition of Halloween Fest. This is actually the penultimate episode of this year's Halloween Fest.
Right.
But we're also continuing the tradition of seeing films that I never saw before.
Amazing to me that you've never seen this.
That's a whole segment. Films Dan should have seen.
Right.
And hasn't seen.
Right.
You know, of course I've seen all the main clips and this and that, but I've that watched it start to finish, which of course we're talking about The Exorcist.
Which is now out on 4K.
Pause for effect for Mike to hold up all iterations of physical media.
Well, this
I like the book.
Yeah, it's a digi book.
I like the
Blu-ray.
Okay.
But the quality of the 4K is so far superior.
Well, let's be honest. One of the reasons I was able to watch it in the comfort of my home was that 4K edition you just held up.
Correct.
Which garnered me the digital copy of that.
That's right.
Which, by the way, I have the theatrical and the director's cut, the unrated director's cut, both loaded with extras. Just loaded
and
with extras.
For this episode, we both watched the director's cut.
You know, I was out today, as you know, going around to different kind of open markets, you know, these where the artisans are, the local vendors that bring their wares or whatever. And I stopped by, one of our friends here of the show, Robbie Vamps with Vamps Emporium, at Vamps Emporium, if you want to follow her on Instagram. I stopped by her booth, and she has a lot of different things for sale, but she had these magnets, which, of course, I love.
Yeah.
And look what I scored.
Oh, perfect. An Exorcist.
I mean, how
Linda
perfect
Blair
is that?
and her finest.
Exactly.
Or is that the new one? Is that the
original?
No,
this is the classic. Yeah.
Okay.
Now, it was the day after Christmas, 1973, when The Exorcist came out. And
I did not see this in the theaters.
You did? Okay.
I did not. I was.
Yeah, you still would have been quite young at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that would have been disturbing if you'd said you did see it in the theater.
Right.
Let's give the tale of the tape. So 2 hours and 2 minutes or 2 hours and like 12 minutes, depending on which one you're watching,
the
director's cut or whatever. Directed by William Friedkin, based on the novel by William Peter Blatty, who we'll talk a lot about. Of course, stars Ellen Burstyn. We'll talk a lot about the casting. She plays Chris McDeal. Of course, she reprises her role in The Exorcist Believer.
Which barely.
You can comment on a little bit.
I will.
We're not going to talk too much about that.
No.
In fact, in full transparency, this was to be an episode on the new film.
Correct.
And we just decided we were going to bail on that because
I told you
early
don't
reviews.
Waste your money.
Well, this before you even started watching it, we were looking at the reviews. We were looking at the ratings, and we said, no way.
And I'll tell you, those ratings were right, because I've seen it
probably a little kind. Linda Blair, of course, stars as Reagan.
12 years old.
Max von Sydow, Lee J. Cobb, Jack McGowan, and Jason Miller. Those are probably your main players in the film.
Kitty Wynn as well.
Kitty Wynn. Yeah, but Kitty Wynn played
Sharon, which was like...
See, I don't... That wasn't a big role, but that's fair.
Well,
she's on the cast list, but that's...
Right, but she was in two. She was the only one that, along with Linda Blair, that did two. And
but in this film, she's probably in at 10 minutes.
She's like a nanny, kind of.
Yeah, she's not in a whole lot, though.
Yeah.
Now, you you mentioned Friedkin. Now, you know, of course, the French Connection won the Academy Award, I think.
Correct.
For that, right? 1971.
70.
It was 71. Yeah.
71, that's right.
So he's coming off the success of that film, which is pretty much what got him this film, or part of what got him this film. But Blatty also wanted Friedkin.
Correct. And they later had a falling out because they were to come together for Exorcist 3, which I'm holding up. But they didn't see eye to eye, which... If you've seen, I don't know if you watched any interviews with Friedkin outside of the DVD.
Oh, yeah. Now, Exorcist, about a $12 million budget. To date, it's grossed like $400-plus million. Like
At the time, in 73, when it came out, it was the biggest hit that year. Mm-hmm. Was nominated for 10 Academy Awards. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of a joke that it only won two. People were like, what?
First horror film to be nominated for Best Picture.
Right.
Which was a big deal too. And I think it was sort of, you know, it wasn't clear initially what was going on other than the fact that, you know, the lines around the corner waiting to get into the theater.
Correct.
Was it Warner Brothers? It was Warner Brothers, right? And I think it was Warner Brothers. And they basically, my understanding is they rented out, like they kind of had the whole theater, the whole theater at that point. And, this was in the middle in winter, right? Late December,
right.
People are waiting out for hours in the cold in line to get in. So there was an instant buzz among those that had seen it. The stories, of course, you know, of people getting like physically reacting to the film.
Well, ironically, what was it? It was this week, maybe 2 days ago. You were, I don't know where you were, in line at Publix, I think. And you snapped a picture of, I think it was People Magazine, right?
I actually have it right here. I took a shot of it.
And you took a snapshot and sent it to me. And it was like Exorcist in big letters, best horror movie ever, ? Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I listened to numerous commentaries.
Oh, good.
Numerous interviews and all kinds of things. You know, there's all these stories, right, about things that occurred during the production, after the production. People died.
It was haunted.
They were saying it was cursed, right? The whole production was cursed.
And, right.
Which makes for a good story anyways, given what it's about. But I was also very surprised. I'm like, okay, at what point am I going to read on the news feeds that William Friedkin got arrested for abuse? I mean, the stuff this guy would put the cast through was crazy. And his relationship with Linda Blair seemed a little odd. He was a very eccentric guy, clearly.
Right. Well, he died just 2 months ago.
He did. And it was weird. You read something that was incorrect.
I did. It was a fake.
Oh, okay. I mean, he died of like heart failure or something.
Yeah, due to pneumonia. And then he had heart failure.
I meant to reach out to you and say, hey, I'm not sure where you saw that.
But. Yes. He still has a movie unreleased that's coming out, I think, next month.
It's on Max.
Oh, already. The Kane Mutiny is?
It's the Kane Mutiny Court Martial
with Kiefer Sutherland,
who's going to be, of course, with us at Spooky Empire.
Right.
Not literally with us, but he's going to be
You'll
there.
Be chatting him up, I'm sure. I'm going
to try to be chatting him up, yeah. I don't know if you know about this. They do this thing where when a director, I guess, is of a certain age, there's this kind of insurance policy that they have to abide by, right? They have basically a bench player, another director on standby, God forbid something were to happen.
Right.
And they can't finish the film. Well, that's what happened with Friedkin and this Kane Mutiny movie. And the director who was at his side was Guillermo del Toro.
Oh, wow.
And who was a huge fan of his anyways.
Right.
So he talked a lot about in this interview that I read about just having the opportunity to just kind of watch him work. And but I wanted to just see a little of it to see if, you know, between the French Connection and Exorcist and this. But wow, what a marvelous job the guy did on The Exorcist, though.
Yeah, and he was a rogue director, too, because in The French Connection, if you talk to somebody who's a fan of that film, the first thing they'll say is the best car chase ever. Well, that was a real car chase on a street with no permits. They filmed it all illegally, basically. So it was real chase.
That's very Friedkin-esque.
It is.
Yeah. So the quick synopsis, if anybody doesn't know what The Exorcist is about.
Right. Basically, there's three parties, three players in the Exorcist. There's Max von Sydow, plays a priest, and he's in Iraq, which was actually filmed in Iraq, which this is before, was it Saddam Hussein? Is that...
Yeah,
it was before his tenure, but it was still like impossible to film there. But they did. So,
well, he had to make agreements with the local government there and the Ba'ath Party and all of this at the time.
Right, and they had to teach him how to make blood, look like blood.
They said, okay, you got to do film classes for the locals.
That's right.
All this stuff they had to agree to. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, Max von Sydow's in Iraq, and he gets a sense.
There's an archaeological dig going on.
Right. He comes across this medallion, and you can't really pick this up from the movie unless you listen to the commentary or read the book. But he's basically getting a signal from the demon, which he has dealt with exorcisms before. And so his character's in Iraq, gets this signal, and then they show him face to face with
the statue,
which represents Pazuzu, right? Which the Heretic goes a lot more into that than this one does.
Mm-hmm. The Heretic being the sequel.
The sequel, yeah, okay. Exorcist 2. And then you got Linda Blair, who's seemingly having psychological problems. That's what it first seems like. Eventually, very slowly, she develops into kind of a different being. She's being, the exorcist is happy.
It starts to get quite odd. Yeah.
And then the third character who's having a crisis of conscience is Father Damien Karras.
Right, played by Jason Miller.
Played by Jason Miller brilliantly. Mm-hmm. So, the way they all come together kind of in a weird way, because this is based on a true story. I should have said that up front, which back then they didn't advertise. Same with To Live and Die in L.A., which is also Friedkin, was based on a true story.
Right.
So this is based on a real, I think it was a 14-year-old boy.
Yeah. And it was Blatty, we'll call him as they refer to him. Blatty was a student at Georgetown, because the film takes place in D.C.
All around Georgetown.
In New York and stuff. But the exteriors and such, one of the opening scenes, actually, it cuts from Iraq, I think, and you're in Georgetown.
You're in Georgetown.
Over the Georgetown campus.
Right.
But Blatty's was actual student there. Mm-hmm. And one of the Jesuit priests, who's one of the professors there, tells a story of this possession case that you're talking about that happened in 1949 nearby the Georgetown campus, which is what inspires him to write the novel ultimately.
Right.
Yeah.
So through happenstance, Ellen Burstyn, her character's name is Chris, realizes this isn't just psychological. Something's wrong here. And they put Linda Blair through all these tests, and you see it in the film. Those are real tests they used to do. It seems like the Stone Ages.
And, as you've been talking about, Friedkin really known for this kind of realism approach to filmmaking.
Correct.
You already gave some examples of it from The French Connection. Mm-hmm. And the, it was the same was true with the casting, right? There's actual priests. There's actual.
That's right.
The scene you're talking about with the angiography, I think they call it.
Yeah.
Right. It's this. It's good, very disturbing. Good.
I'm glad you pronounced that.
Yeah, kidding. I know. It's very disturbing. But there's actual doctors that are performing it in the scene.
Correct.
Amazing and detail.
There's a lot of realism all around it, but and Father Karras is questioning his faith, right? And he meets with this priest, Father Dyer, who's a good buddy of his, and he's like,
"Who's an actual priest?"
An actual priest.
Actual priest.
This priest learns of this case of this girl being possessed. And Father Karras is also a psychiatrist. He actually treats the priests in Georgetown for for mental illness or, you know, depression, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. And he's got an education. He's talking to Chris at one point, Ellen Burstyn, and he says, well, you know, I went to Harvard, and, you know, he's naming all these Ivy League schools that he's been to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's a very educated guy. He's also a boxer, and he like a boxer.
He does.
And
he's also dealing with the illness of his mother.
Correct. And his mother dies. And again, he's in this real crisis mode of guilt. And somebody puts him together with Chris, Ellen Burstyn, and she's kind of begging him to come see my daughter. I've tried everything. He has to get permission from the Catholic Church.
She wants him to do an exorcism. Exorcism, I should say. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. He's kind of faithless. You know, I think he's struggling with the fact that he couldn't do more to help his mother.
And he's guilt-ridden because his mother winds up in this kind of like, it looks like One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, right?
It does. And which, you know, there's these parallels like Friedkin does very subtly, right? Where there's the mom in the sanitarium, as they would call it, strapped to the bed, cut to later with Linda Blair as Reagan, when she becomes the kind of the demonic side of, you know, Reagan,
right?
Strapped to the bed. You know, there's all these kind of parallels and things that are going on throughout the story.
Right.
But, and, you know, Friedkin says many, many times, I know you've heard this as well, because it's in the commentaries and things, but numerous times he always goes back to saying the same thing, which is, this is a film about the mystery of faith.
Yeah.
That's it. That's how he sums it up in every interview I've seen him talk about it.
Yeah. And I think that was the disagreement with Blatty when they were going to do the third one. Was he wanted to get away from the church and the faith and the religion. So does the new one, by the way. They kind of are trying to shy away from the church because the church doesn't often say or admit to these. There's only been, you know, maybe a dozen. Right, a handful. Yeah. And, you know, there are records that prove this really happened, which is really freaky. And so the church, finally Karras goes to like the heads of the church and says, I think I need to perform this exorcism. And they don't give him permission. Instead, they say, you know, there's another guy who's done this before. His name is Father Merrin.
Someone who's got some more experience.
More experience. Do you know how old Max von Sydow is in this?
You mean how old he was at the time?
Yeah, in real life.
I mean, I would guess he was in his early 50s at most.
He was,
or was he older than that?
He was only 44.
Right. The makeup is incredible. Dick Smith and Rick Baker, who's a very famous makeup artist.
Now his son is.
Right. Just phenomenal job on the makeup. But that in particular, you would never know it.
No way.
You would never know it.
He looks 70s, like late 70s to me.
Yeah.
And just doing this podcast, I found out he was, because I'm watching The Heretic, right? And there's these scenes and he's young. And I'm like, how did they film this? Because they didn't have that technology like The Irishman, where, you know, they could de-age somebody. Mm-hmm. And that's when I figured out, right when I was watching that, I'm like, did they film this at a different, was this another movie? It was bizarre. And then I looked it up. He spent 4 hours a day in the makeup chair getting this makeup.
Yeah.
So
it was incredible.
Incredible. But he comes into the story fairly late. It's about an hour into it, at least.
Other than that opening sequence that you talked about.
Other than it opens on him.
Right.
So that's how these three characters, all dealing with crisis, you know, Chris with her daughter, mm-hmm. the priest with himself, his mother, the guilt, wanting to leave the church, mm-hmm. feeling unworthy, of wearing the collar. And then you've got Max von Sydow, who has faced the demon before and makes it clear to Karis that, because Karis is like, well, she's talked in this voice and that. He says, it's one voice. It's one thing.
Exactly. Right. And there's a great line that he says in that same exchange, I think it is, where he says, the attack is psychological and powerful. Do not listen.
That's right. That's right.
You know, like, he's not messing around. As
yes,
he goes in there, and you know, there's a you may not pick up on this as it's playing out, but in the directing of the scene, the climax of that whole sequence, you know, Friedkin's direction to Sydow is basically to, like, he knows, his character knows, performing this rite is probably going to be the last thing that he ever does.
Yeah,
and yeah. Man, does he just play it beautifully? Like you said, the acting is. And it's crazy because you learn, of course, if you start doing some research in the film, it's shocking that any of these people got cast.
Yeah.
That Warner Brothers ever agreed to the casting, especially Ellen Burstyn.
Yeah.
Who, you know, had a little bit of, you know, notoriety, but not, she wasn't that well known.
No, this was early in her career.
They wanted people like Jane Fonda and Anne Bancroft, and there was some others, I think. But she was very adamant. I think she reached out to Friedkin and said, I was destined to play this role
mm-hmm.
because of her own Catholic upbringing and, you know, her pulling away from the church. And she just felt like she understood the character. Jason Miller was another one, right? In fact, he almost was like, F you. I don't, Linda Blair, right? They saw how many hundreds of young girls probably, right? And then what happens is Linda Blair's mother totes her into the audition.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately she was, of course, cast, as everyone knows. Lee J. Cobb, you know, this was the thing. Friedkin sprinkled just a couple of, like, these seasoned veteran actors.
Yes.
To give it some gravitas, like Sydow, Lee J. Cobb.
Right.
You know, but again, Linda Blair, Jason Miller, Ellen Burstyn, most
all
people
newcomers.
You didn't really know who they were, right?
And Lee J. Cobb was fantastic in this as the
amazing.
You know, Blatty writes good detectives, and his character Kinderman is his name, Lieutenant Kinderman, played by Lee J. Cobb.
Kinderman.
He comes in. He comes back in part three. But he's played by George C. Scott, right?
Oh, I can see that. I can
an Academy
see that.
Award winner. But I'm telling you, Lee J. Cobb blows him away as playing the part because, you know.
I think he had a very big, he was a big, big stage actor, I believe. I think he was from the theater.
Yeah.
Lee J. Cobb, you know. But it's interesting because I heard Friedkin on one of the commentaries say what his favorite scene in the film was.
Mm-hmm.
Which was probably one of the most striking to me as well, which is it's just this scene between Chris, you know, Ellen Burstyn and Lee J. Cobb. Mm-hmm. It goes on for like 5 minutes, and it's some of the greatest acting you'll ever see. You know, they're both kind of talking around the whole idea that Reagan is
might
the
have
one
killed,
who killed Burke.
That's right.
Which was played by Jack McGoward, who actually died right after the film, like the month after the film was released.
Wow.
He died. I believe he died in like January 73 or something. But, you know, and that struck me throughout the whole film was Friedkin's patience,
yes,
and restraint in the use of cuts.
Yes.
Right? A lot of movement of the camera, but just very slow, very deliberate. I love the way he would move away from the action.
Right.
Yeah, it was so.
And you probably heard this on the commentary, how he filmed Jason Miller as always ascending, mm-hmm. always coming upstairs or up a hill or up those right. big stairs. And yeah. because he was ascending from the depths of his faith into a person who would be the ultimate hero of the story, mm-hmm. if you want to look at it that way. And also the way Lee J. Cobb ends the film, he's not in the ending in the director's cut, but he basically walks away from the case. Right. He's like, you know what? And like you said, they were talking all around it, but his job is to find the killer who pushed Karis out the window.
There's this one shot where Ellen Burstyn goes to the door. She chains it and then opens it and just slow opens it in this reveal of Lee J. Cobb's face.
Yes.
You know, and that's another thing Friedkin did. It was this counterbalance between light and dark, loud and quiet, you know, very jarring, right? It'd be a very, right. very quiet scene and then something very intense would happen. And,
you know, I'm surprised that you liked it, to be honest with you.
I thought it was fantastic.
I thought you would think it was too slow, but it's like you said, he took his time.
Well, we don't see that anymore these days.
No. Or if, like, we've got these 3-hour movies that are an hour too long, mm-hmm. but in this, I'm glad we watched the longer one because there's a couple of significant scenes in it. So if you get the new cut, watch them both, but watch the director's cut. Definitely listen to his commentary.
Well, you know, what it does, shooting it like that, it allows these performances to breathe. Yeah. And I tell you what, Ellen Burstyn, she's so phenomenal in this. Yeah. And her chemistry with Linda Blair. Mm-hmm. You'd think that they were literally mother and daughter. And
it was so much affection in the beginning before the possession.
Right. And before the filming, right? Friedkin had them getting together and they started to build a relationship. And you see it there on screen.
You do.
It's about as natural as it gets.
And to see Ellen Burstyn go from this daunting, loving, she's an actress in real life.
Right.
I mean, not in real life, in the movie. She's
in the film.
She plays an actress.
See, this is what struck me. I didn't expect, first of all, the film to open the way it did. That was very, I was like, oh, what is this? You know, I thought we were getting right into the creepiness, but that whole sequence that you talked about in Iraq, that's not at all how I thought it was going to start. But Ellen Burstyn, I mean, she goes through every kind of
emotion,
like range of emotion, but I didn't expect that. It was like she was an actress, and
right,
the whole thing is they're filming a movie at Georgetown. It was kind of interesting,
right?
Like a movie within a movie kind of thing.
Exactly.
What was your experience with her out in San Diego?
I worked at the Old Globe in San Diego, which is based on the Globe in you know, England,
and she was starring in a play.
And I worked in the education department, and it was very quiet where I was usually alone, or I had two supervisors who were with me, but usually I would come in. She would come in while I was there because she knew it was really quiet, and she was doing a play there at the time. This is like 1990,
mid-90s?
Yeah, it's like
mid to late 90s.
Late 90s.
Yeah.
And she looked great. And I was like, oh my God, when she first was, you know, she introduced herself and mm-hmm. I said, you know, I didn't ask for an autograph or anything. I didn't want to. And she sat there learning her lines. Mm. And I was praying she would turn and say, hey, you want to run lines with me?
That would have been amazing.
That's what I was praying for, but never happened. Amazing. And I left her alone and she would just sit there. And if she got up, she would say, would you like a drink or a coffee or something? I was like,
yeah.
Ellen Burstyn's getting me a drink.
That's a close encounter.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the look of the film, Owen Roizman, who was the DP on the film, mm-hmm. spectacular work. We talked a little bit about the makeup. I mean, another thing too, right? You realize no CGI back then.
Right.
Right. And you know, very minimal things you could do with optical effects and all of that. And so this was very, very sort of old school engineers, other craftsmen and craftspeople coming up with these ingenious ways to do these different things, like how she levitates over the bed,
right.
how the bed moves. It's just
literally so they use magic to do it.
That's
you know, the way
it.
A magician would levitate.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the only thing missing was the hoop to show there's no strings or wires.
Right.
But you're right. And especially the bed. Now, I don't know if we've talked about it in the show, but I worked my way through college in a haunted house as an actor in a haunted house.
That's right. A good old Terror on Church Street, folks.
Right.
For anybody that was in the Orlando area at that time.
Back then in the
It was a very great attraction. It was a great
Right.
attraction.
And there was an exorcist room.
That's right.
And there I used to work a lot of times in the rooms next to it. So I would kind of sit on the bed while we were waiting for a group to come through.
Right.
And all the girls used to get bruised because the bed was all, you know, once people came in the room, she'd hit a switch and the bed would go bouncing. And that's what I when I'm watching it, I'm seeing that bed going crazy. I'm like, wow.
And did you see how they did that?
I didn't.
There's one featurette that you can find where it's on the other side of the wall, right?
Yeah.
This was a set that they built, which again, it's hard to believe. Everything looks so authentic. It's
right.
crazy, which again is Friedkin. I mean, he wanted things to be so realistic that he, you know, things that maybe most filmmakers would try to steer away from was a lot of mirrors and reflective surfaces and things.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, if that, those are the things that would be in this environment, I want them in.
Yeah.
They show behind the other side of the wall when the bed's going crazy. There's like five guys back there. Two of them are doing this with like levers. One guy's got a crank, you know,
right.
and it's making the bed do all of that stuff. That's all it
now,
was.
Now, when Linda Blair would move, because there were times where just her body would be jumping. Did they show that as well?
They did.
I didn't see that.
There was one. There's the first one you see is very odd, right? It's like just like her torso is
right.
up and down.
She sits up, and
they had her in this like back harness, you know, that they could kind of without her getting injured. And it's she talks about it too,
right?
In the interviews, you know,
right.
So it's just all of these very practical things with mechanics and whatnot.
Yeah.
Same thing with her levitating over the bed, and there were some funny things too, like Jason Miller. You know, you talk about Father Karras, you know, the whole famous pea soup
right.
scene, right?
Right.
And they're shooting it and, you know, a couple of takes and, you know, it's supposed to hit him like in the chest or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Friedkin intentionally knew.
It was going right in his face.
It was going right in his face.
Right in his mouth.
Right in his mouth, which pissed Miller off. If you go back and watch, because it's the take that they kept in the movie.
Right.
He has this disgusted, kind of pissed off look, because that's not what he expected to happen.
Right.
Father Dyer, you talked about, right? He's performing the last rites to Karras mm-hmm. after he takes the demon inside of himself and leaps out the window.
Right. And he's holding his hand.
He ends up at the bottom of what they call the exorcist steps.
Right.
And he's doing the last rites. And well, he had to get very emotional. I guess he wasn't selling the scene. And Friedkin slaps him across the face.
Wow.
And then action. Like, how did he get away with this stuff?
Yeah, I'm shocked that.
And, you know, he was.
I'm not shocked.
Well,
because
people would quit. And one of the grips said he saw one time he shook this guy's hand. Hey, great work. And then 2 seconds later, he walked over and said, get rid of that guy.
Right.
You know, he just was in shot after shot after shot. They said they would come in. One guy left for vacation for like, he was on sick leave for like 3 days, comes back. They're still shooting the same scene. It was ridiculous, but it's kind of sounds like Kubrick. I mean, the guy's
right. Kubrick was the guy of 100 takes.
Yeah.
You know? And you know, it's interesting because Friedkin learned from Hitchcock. he worked on The Twilight Zone with Rod Serling. So,
and you know, it's interesting to say, because the Exorcist steps, what did they used to be called before people started calling them that? They were called the Hitchcock steps. You know, the 39 steps. And, you know, all of that. He was a huge, Friedkin was a big Orson Welles fan as well, which no surprise, again, given the techniques and things that he had to employ for this film.
Yeah.
Right. You think about Welles cutting holes in the floor to get certain angles and things.
Last night, I just watched The Trial, which is a Kafka novel, and it's very, very complex.
Is that Anthony Perkins?
Yes. Okay. He stars in it, and Orson Welles plays what's called the advocate, which is his lawyer, but that's for another podcast.
Did you know that Blatty has a cameo in The Exorcist? Did you pick up on that?
I think he does a lot. Like Hitchcock, I think he's in a lot of his films.
Well, I'm talking Blatty, the novelist, not Friedkin.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But is I don't remember when it was. I don't.
It was very early at the one of the opening sequences where they're filming the movie at Georgetown.
Oh, okay.
He's playing the producer. Ironically, he was a producer on The Exorcist.
Okay.
He's playing the producer that's kind of arguing with Jack McGowan's character,
right?
Who's the director of the film they're shooting on campus,
right?
And very good. He's very realistic.
Sequence, you know, it's like a protest, a student protest, and Ellen Burstyn breaks through the crowd to get to and as she's going through the crowd, she looks over and makes eye contact with Father Karras, who is on, you know, he's always around the Georgetown campus because that's where he's a priest. So
it's a very odd reaction by Karras in that scene.
Yeah, he's got like a big smile.
Like he's 10 years old, like very giddy.
Yeah.
It was odd. I didn't know what that was signaling. I don't know. I still don't understand that shot, but
yeah, that was an interest. And
some sort of foreshadowing I never picked up on, I guess.
Right. You know, my first experience with The Exorcist was watching SNL. Mm-hmm. Gilda Radner, they did a funny sketch where she's in the bed and you know, her voice.
No, it wasn't Gilda. It was name a couple of the other women from back then.
Lorraine Newman, maybe?
Yes, it was Lorraine Newman. Yeah. And Richard Pryor is playing the
priest. That's right. He's the priest.
Yeah, I think we showed it during the first look we did for Exorcist Believer. I know we played that clip on the show before.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then that's very funny. You know, that was another unexpected thing, right? Because with the special effects, that whole sequence, right, the pea soup thing where this green, right, it's coming out of her mouth. I wasn't expecting how it plays out in the film, which is not this projectile,
right,
constant fire hose stream of pea soup. Right. What was more intense to me was where it's just kind of oozing out of her mouth.
Yeah.
As this kind of blob of, it was
it's not pea soup. It's
no.
Some kind of,
it was like porridge. It was a porridge.
Yeah. It was very thick. Yeah.
And Linda Blair had a physical double for some of her scenes as well, because like it's very graphic. I don't know how this wasn't rated X. I'm sure it was close to being rated X. And then somehow they got a rated R. Just for the language. But, you know, the scenes, this is a very graphic scene that involves Linda Blair's character and a crucifix, right?
Right, right.
Well, they didn't have her do it. But if you go and watch the featurettes and the making of how they were able, because they are filming Linda Blair as part of that sequence, but it's not her doing those very graphic, vulgar things. Friedkin had a way to have her go through the motions, so to speak, without doing the actual thing. It was very, very interesting how he did it.
And we just talked to a young actress, and you know, there's restrictions and things. And you mentioned how Alex Vincent in Child's Play would pretend to forget his lines because he didn't want to swear.
He didn't want to curse, unlike me here on the podcast. I'll just let him fly and all, you know. I'm offending everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I had said how Chucky was tamer this season. I was way off base.
Way off. Yeah.
They are right back to Bloodbath. So,
what else to say about The Exorcist there?
I just.
What's your overall assessment of it?
To me, it is one of the scariest movies I've ever seen.
It is.
The novel was, you know, it's very faithful to the novel as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if I was to rate this, I'm going to start my own rating system pretty soon.
I thought you might pull it out here.
Yeah. Well, I would say this is like a 92 on my scale out of 100. And that's, you know, that's pretty, I don't go much higher than that.
Well, I mean, every aspect of the film that you could point to is superb, right?
Yeah.
The acting and the directing and the effects and the sound editing and like everything. It's just,
that's why
the screenplay, you know, all of it.
That's why it was so disappointing when the Academy Awards were announced. This was easily the top movie of the year. And I know The Way We Were came out and Barbara Streisand was nominated for Best Actress, but it wound up going to somebody else from some obscure movie. And I don't even remember the actress's name that won. I thought Ellen Burstyn, when you watch this, how could she not win?
Her performance is so spectacular.
Yeah.
It's really something to watch.
So what about you? Like, what's your take? I mean, I'm really surprised you liked it this much.
Yeah. Without you teaching me the rating system yet, I would agree with your assessment. I would at least give it a 92. I might even have it a little bit higher.
Well, I looked up Roger Ebert's review and he gave it 100.
He gave it 100. Now I will say, cause we do talk about it on the show, if you look up Rotten Tomatoes right now, you'll see it's got, this is disappointing, but it's very few critical ratings, but 78%, which is ridiculous.
Wow.
87% from the audience, getting a little bit closer there.
Yeah.
Metascore 82, one of the highest I've seen.
Yeah, that's way up.
That's up there. That's up there. But I would agree.
You know, the Metascore, they sometimes, I don't know what their formula is, because like, Gene Siskel and Roger Ebert used to use the star system, and it was 5 stars, or they had their thumbs up and thumbs down that made them famous.
Not as good as the Midas system that we're going to bring.
Right.
Bring
but they wound up converting it into a number. So
maybe we should say that too, because again, we always like to be full transparency on the show. And you and I got in this whole beef. I took a 180 about the whole scoring thing.
Right.
I'm feeling guilty like Father Karras over it. I'm thinking I might have to get on board because I can't sit here and just watch you do it the whole time.
Right.
So
right.
I'm thinking we're going to have to talk about it and get it situated.
The old brother score.
It'll be coming to you in whatever form it's going to come to you once we get out of Halloween Fest.
Right.
We're going to start rocking that. But yeah, I just was blown away. Friedkin, despite his techniques and tactics, I don't know how he wasn't incarcerated back then, but it's just phenomenal directing. I just thought it was wonderful. But Ellen Burstyn, the whole cast was just crazy good.
Top to bottom.
Highly recommend. Yeah, if you're somebody like me who hadn't seen it, what a joy to check this one off the box, you know? And again, thanks to Vamps Emporium for giving me this magnet.
What about slasher fans? You know, how do you think they would look at this film? I mean, there's enough blood to go around.
There is. I think there's enough gore, if you will.
And,
But everything else about it is so terrifying.
Yeah,
that I think it would easily make up for that. You know.
Yeah.
So this one's a great one. I love it. I'm glad I seen it. And your recommendation is not to watch Exorcist Believer. I think is where you're at with that.
In fact, every sequel, there's a prequel called Dominion.
Mm.
The Heretic is unwatchable. It's so bad.
Yeah.
The new one, Ellen Burstyn, I didn't clock it, but if she does 10 minutes, I'd be surprised. I think it's under 10 minutes. The only reason she's in it, she wrote a book, A Mother's Story.
Right.
So,
and to get asses in seats on the 50th anniversary of the film. Yeah.
But I told you off camera, I think this was filmed, this was a different movie. And then they're like, "Well, it's a 50. Why don't we make it an Exorcist movie?"
We're gonna need a David Gordon Green rating system of some kind.
Oh man,
he's got a couple of stinkers there in the old can. But
so one a couple, good one.
go up on a couple of notes here for as we wrap it up here. So it's a long one, but this was worth it.
Yeah.
The 50th anniversary, we've gone over 50 minutes here so far, but it was worth it. This film deserved, just like Friedkin, take your time with it, you know.
Right.
I do want to say, I'd be remiss if I didn't get it captured on air for posterity's sake, but happy birthday to my co-host with the most, my brother from the same mother, Mike. He's celebrating a significant birthday today, is all we'll say.
40 is, oh man, 40. I know. Nights.
It's like, yes, 40 going twice, going three times.
Sold.
And on a sadder note, I want to say that, you know, we just found out before we came on air that Suzanne Summers passed away. And I wanted to mention it because she has been in. She hadn't done a film since like 2001 or something, but she was in a few TV films in the late 90s that were horror films. So I thought it was relevant to mention her. And also just, you know, one of those actresses who just gave me so much, you know, so many laughs.
Yeah.
As a kid, a show I probably shouldn't have been watching when I was that young, Three's Company, right. But
and you know,
she was so good.
I think today she would be applauded as a woman's rights advocate.
Well,
back then, she was told to shut up because she wanted equal pay for the women on that show. And what did they do? They wound up filming her like on vacation.
Right.
You know, and she was only on the phone. She couldn't even interact with the other actors.
She ended up on the Roper spinoff.
Exactly.
That's what it was. And, but yeah,
it's sad.
100 episodes she played Chrissy Snow. She's now at the Regal Beagle with Jack Tripper, you know, God rest his soul too. John Ritter was just so amazing.
Another
too.
Terrible so loss.
We've lost some good ones. Some good ones, but
and ironically tomorrow, which is October 16th as we film this, was her birthday.
Mm-hmm.
So she died the morning before her birth.
She would have been what, 77?
77, yeah.
Yeah. And what was the you know, she became, of course, after post Three's Company, right? What was the exercise piece of equipment?
The
Thighmaster.
Yeah.
She was one of the originals back then with that, like Jane Fonda and you know,
who's the other karate actor that used to with Billy Joel's model
Chuck
wife.
Norris?
Yeah, Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris.
Remember, he had the full gym, the total gym.
Yeah.
Him
sliding up and down.
Pulling
himself up and down. Yeah.
And who's the from Vacation? Chrissy, the model.
Christy Brinkley.
She was on it too.
Right. This is taking a weird turn, this whole conclusion.
We could jump.
That's why I saved it for the end. You know, it's just, we had to light the mood a little bit after talking about The Exorcist for an hour or so. Well, there you go. It's the O Brother podcast review on the 50th anniversary of The Exorcist. I can't believe it, but that's a good one. And speaking of spooky things, Mike and I are going to be in the house at Spooky Empire, the Dark Side of Comic-Con, October 27th through the 29th. Make sure that you come out and see us. If you're hearing, watching
where
this episode, it's going to be at the Hyatt Regency in Orlando, Florida. Okay. So if you're in town,
get your tickets now.
Yeah, get your tickets now. Stop by our table. We're going to be there all weekend. We've got a lot of good giveaways that we're going to have. So we're looking forward to hopefully interacting with a lot of people there. It's their 20th anniversary. So it's a big deal this year.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's going to do it for another episode of the O Brother Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Smith. Alongside me, as always, my brother from the same mother, Mike Smith. And we will see you next time.
Boo, everybody.
Hi, everyone. This is Cindy Busby, and you're listening to the O Brother Podcast.